Hello, everybody, and welcome to the SightSide Podcast. My name is James, and I'm going to be your host today. The SightSide is a podcast where we explore the realm of applied neurodivergence in life and in the workplace. This is episode one. This is the origin story. This is where I'm just going to come out, introduce myself, tell you a little bit about my story, how I got here, my vision for the podcast, and where I believe we can go with this. Basically, 9 months ago, and this all transpired in the last 9 months. 9 months ago, I was a truck driver over the road driving a big semi all over the place. And today I run a consulting firm that's built entirely on cognitive patterns that I've been trying to hide for the last 40 years. And I want to tell you what happened in between and how we got here from trucking to consulting. And it's a little bit of a bumpy ride, but just bear with me. Hopefully we can find some value in this. Last April, I was still driving a truck. I've been a trucker for about the past 5 years, and out of all the different jobs and careers and industries that I've worked in, trucking was the best fit overall. And I didn't know it at the time, but trucking was what I would call my unicorn profession. And the reason I didn't know is because I have always been autistic, and I've always had ADHD. I'd always suspected the ADHD part. It's something I never really looked into, but I've been plagued by the usual ADHD untreated side effects, anxiety, depression, laziness, which I didn't know was executive dysfunction. Today I have language for that, but I'd always been accused of being lazy, failure to launch. You know, I could never get going. I could never get motivated. I could never achieve anything. I would job hop. I would hobby hop. I'd get bored so quickly because I was, you know, I had the mind where I'm always chasing novelty, always chasing the next big thing. I didn't have any concept of internal dopamine regulation, so I would try to fill that in with anything novel I could find. Trying to fill that hole, which could never really be filled. The reality is, you know, my brain doesn't regulate dopamine on its own. So I was on a constant search for it. Since then, I've been formally diagnosed with level 1 autism and ADHD. So now I realize why trucking was such a great fit. You know, the view would change every day. I was always on the move. I'd be living life at 70 miles an hour. I had my own space, the inside of the cab. It was mine and mine alone. And there was enough novelty and variety, and especially stress, to keep my mind occupied. Like many people with ADHD, I maintain a sense of hyper-awareness about everything, basically stuck in flight or flight mode at all times. So trucking was a lot of high-stress situations that really fed into that ADHD side of my brain. I would rise to the occasion. I used to laugh about how it wouldn't be a real workday unless I almost died at least once, which is very true for trucking because it's one of the few professions where you can do everything right and still die. And the profession also aided my autistic side, the inside mind that craved structure, I craved repetition, and there were so many rules and so many things that I could just really dive into. Safety standards, you know, documentation standards. I used to love trip planning, all the different math, all the different loads and arrival windows and hours of service. And there were all these different systems that I would be running at the same time, and it would be up to me to coordinate all of that. And trucking overall also scratched another psychological itch that I have, and that's maladaptive daydreaming. In my case, it was a trauma response that followed me into adulthood. I'd always get lost in these long and complicated daydreams that would sometimes devolve into autistic rumination, but most of the time it was just genuine fantasy. It was an internal escape my mind would default to whenever I wasn't being stressed out. So trucking would satisfy this because half the time I would be in hyper-vigilant fight-or-flight mode, you know, rush hour Houston traffic, for example, or I'd have these wide-open stretches of road with not a lot going on, so I could just stare out the window and daydream. I mean, that's what's magical about trucking. It's literally the only profession that pays you to stare out the window and daydream. However, in April, I suffered an injury. It wasn't work-related. I fell down a couple stairs. I ended up having a fall. It was pretty bad. It's resulted in a pretty severe hip injury that eventually required surgery. And basically, my world fell apart. You know, what I had been using is not only an occupation, but just as every day, you know, I was a trucker. It was my, you know, a lot of my identity was tied up in that. And I was out of work. I couldn't work and I had no direction. I fell into a pretty deep depression and I had considered relapse more than once. This brings me to another point in my story. I am in recovery. I've been clean and sober for over 6 years. And this is something else that ties into neurodivergence as a whole, is substance use disorders plague our community at a pretty high rate. But I don't want to delve too much into the addiction side of things. This is about how I got here. The fact is that I was in a very, very dark place And April was a serious gut check to me. And I had to pivot very, very quickly. So I had, you know, been involved in recovery for a while, and I had a book that was ruminating in my mind for some time. So I finally wrote and published my book, From Liquor to Dhikr, which examines the 12 steps of recovery through the lens of Islamic spirituality. And for those of you who listen to my other podcast, The Path of the Sober Seeker, you're already familiar with this material. Basically, it was a book that needed to be written. And it gave me, you know, gave me something to focus on, so I wasn't so, you know, depressed with my injury and whatnot. I was able to actually, for a time, focus on it. While I was writing it, though, it was suggested that maybe I could find a career in the recovery field. I was fairly active in recovery circles, and I'd been helping people in this regard for many, many years, so why not make it official, right? So I got to studying. I ended up got the coursework and got a CDCA license, the Chemical Dependency Counselor Assistant with the state of Ohio. It's just a purely clinical role. And while I was doing that, I also applied for and received a peer recovery supporter license, which is something a little far. It's in the same vein as recovery. In my opinion, it's a little bit more useful, but it is harder to achieve. Peer support licenses are only granted to those who have actual lived experience with substance use disorders or mental illness. You have to have been there and done that. You had to earn that by sacrificing a big chunk of your life to the nightmare of active addiction, which any of you who are in recovery, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You have to earn your seat with it. So this is where I had a major pivot point, a major epiphany with my life. I was doing the training modules for the peer recovery supporter, and there was one small line that did it. It was just one little sentence that changed everything for me. I was doing the trauma module, talking about trauma responses, and how that applies to not only active addiction, but the recovery. And this line, it wrecked me, guys. It really did. I went into an actual shutdown. Basically, it said, instead of asking someone what is wrong with you, you ask what happened to you. And I stopped. I literally just stopped. I read it again and again and again. Because like many other neurodivergent people, especially undiagnosed, I've never fit in anywhere. We just don't fit in. And I've always been socially marginalized. I've always been excluded. And time after time, my social awkwardness would lead people to shout, what's wrong with you? You know, I've had employers, bosses, what's wrong with you? Why would you do that? What is wrong with you? It would be my entire childhood. Why would you do that? Why would you say that to them? What's wrong with you? Like I knew, like I had an answer. You know, I was trying to do my best, but I couldn't say that. You know, I couldn't say what's wrong with me. And the very question, what's wrong with you? It has no actual answer that's going to satisfy someone who asks it. But the pivot hit me hard because it had never occurred to me, and no one had ever asked me, what happened to you? How did you get here? No one had ever shown me that kind of compassion, and I've never even shown myself that kind of compassion. So what did happen? You know, that opened the door to a lot of trauma that I had experienced and lived through my life, and it forced me to look at the actual events, like what had actually happened to me. And that led me down a deep, deep rabbit hole. I started doing research into trauma. I started doing research into my history, you know, kind of digging up things and seeing what happened. You know, all those times where people were like, what happened to you? Okay, what was the situation? What, you know, what, not what's wrong with me, but what happened? And I did this, you know, I was pretty passionate about this because if I was going to be a trauma-informed peer supporter, I had to reconcile my own trauma first. And during this research, this one term kept surfacing over and over again, and that's neurodivergence, which is something I never really looked into. However, there was a pattern here, and at the time, I wasn't even really aware of what I was seeing. And I was, you know, I'd see this pop up as neurodivergence. I wasn't too, you know, still new to me. And finally, I had a moment. I was looking at a meme on Facebook, and it basically said, the best way to ruin an ADHD person's day is to give them a 3 p.m. appointment. And I'm like, wow, that resonated. Because over 40 years, if I have any kind of late-in-the-day engagement, I'd be in perpetual waiting mode. I can't focus on anything. I can't do anything except anticipate and wait for that appointment. And I can't tell you why I did it. It was just my reality. But it hit me pretty hard. So I started to look into ADHD. Like, seriously look into it. And while I was down that rabbit hole, I started to learn more about Asperger's syndrome, what today we call level 1 autism. And a lot of that was resonating with me, too. It would explain pretty much why I said what I said, my, you know, unnatural bluntness, my inability to engage in small talk or really be overly social, which is kind of it's kind of ironic because I've always been outgoing, just I'm not social. But, you know, if you know, you know. But, you know, as I'm going through all that, there was enough evidence and enough resonance that I actually started to take some online testing for autism spectrum disorder. There's a few different online tests you can try. And I did, you know, I took three of them. I took three separate ones, and all three of them pointed to me having autism spectrum disorder, ASD. And this would be considered a self-diagnosis. But you know, I still would have that sense of skepticism, maybe cynicism. And online testing is online testing. You know, it's only going to go so far. So I took the results with a grain of salt. I've always been a believer in the concept of trust but verify. So I decided to get it verified. I reached out to a local mental health professional. It took me a little bit of digging to find one that would work with adults, for one, because most of what's out there as far as services, mental illness services, and therapy services are more, you know, when you look for autism or neurodivergence, a lot of that is geared more towards children and youth, you know, minors rather than adults. But finally, I found someone. I met with a fantastic psychologist. She's amazing. She remains my therapist to this day. And we met. You know, I did the initial intake with her, and I expressed my concerns. I shared with her a little bit my history. And I think I came in a little bit overprepared. I had like all the results of all my tests. I had all these, you know, all these different things. And we kind of laughed about, you know, neurotypical, well-adjusted people don't spend hours of internet research, you know, Googling, am I autistic? So that alone is pretty much kind of an indicator that, yeah, you might be on the spectrum. Anyway, so we set up testing across a series of appointments, and the whole thing took about 8 hours total, and it was pretty comprehensive. It was a lot went into it. However, the end result, I was officially diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder level one, which is, you know, the low needs. I would say I'm more 1.5 because I have my moments where I do need a little bit more support, and ADHD, so what we'd call ADHD, you know, but the best and worst of both worlds. So I need to back this up a little bit, that while I was going through this process, my personal life, especially after that fall, was still not the best. You know, I was still out of work. I was making ends meet by liquidating my crypto assets. You know, I'm selling off 401ks, doing different things like this to basically make ends meet because I didn't have income. And I was also undergoing treatment for my hip. It started with conservative treatment. We're doing physical therapy. Then I had an injection, then I got another injection. I'm getting MRIs, I'm doing x-rays. And this was spread out over several months. And finally, I ended up meeting with a surgeon and doing a serious surgical consultation. And all this was new to me because I've never been seriously injured like this before. So this was my first introduction to the, I guess, medical industry as a patient. And some was good, some was, you know, I have pretty good insurance, so I was able to go through some pretty good hospitals here in the Cleveland area and been pretty well taken care of. So all of this, there was all this treatment, but what was going on was my hip wasn't improving. Actually, it was getting worse. It wasn't great. So I met with a surgeon, I met with another surgeon, and this one was a specialist in hip preservation. And he explained to me what my options were, and finally we picked one. And a few weeks later, I had surgery for the first time in my life. And then rehab, and then physical therapy, and I still continue treatments to the day. But the point is that this summer and fall were periods of very, very, very intense change for me. And I was dealing with problems I'd never dealt with before. I had problems in areas where before I didn't even have areas. So I was coming to, you know, I was forced to really, really adjust to things on the fly. And like many people with neurodivergence, I don't always transition well with it. But I was coming to a lot of different realizations, and it was, you know, it wasn't great. There's a saying I kept telling myself over and over again. It's that the pain of change is forgotten once the benefit of change is realized. And it's one of those like platitudes you kind of tell yourself in the moment. It might not feel good in the moment, but it actually turned out to be true. Because finally I started to get the benefit of the change. You know, we talk about in recovery circles that nothing changes if nothing changes, and I needed to make a change somewhere. So after receiving my formal diagnosis, I started to realize these benefits. For example, I had been surviving life with untreated ADHD. You know, I had especially the ADHD was bad. I had been a lifelong 3-inning ball player. You know, I was constitutionally incapable of following through on anything. You know, like many of us, I have a whole hobby graveyard out in my garage. You know, we start things, we don't finish them. And I routinely fell prey to like my own executive dysfunction. And that's where I would be like in this loop. I'd be like, all my heart, I would want to get up and do whatever I had to do. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I'd be in whatever thought loop, whatever, you know, focus tunnel I was on. And I would jump through like these crazy mental gymnastics because I could never change my behavior to meet my goals. So instead, I would change my goals to match my behavior, which wasn't, you know, wasn't helping me get anywhere. So finally, I had some help. My doctor prescribed me Vyvanse, which was an absolute game changer for me. I had never been medicated for my ADHD side, never been medicated for any of this before. And from day one, it was I got real emotional. I'm gonna level with you guys. It was it flipped a switch for me. Because all my life I've had this voice inside. I call it death's radio, because all it wanted for me was to die. It was this total negative self-talk. Basically this 24-hour voice inside just bullying me about everything. 24 hours, it would never shut up. And finally, it came with a volume switch. It was totally cut off. I wasn't in this these negative ruminations anymore. I found for the first time I had function. I was able to actually get things done. I had follow through. And it was amazing. I could think of a task and actually get up and do it. And I'm like, this is how normal people live their life. Like, you think of something and just do it. Like, I didn't have to fight for myself. I didn't get sidetracked. I didn't get, fall on all these side quests. I was able to actually get done what I set out to get done. And it was funny, because when I started this treatment, my doctor and I sat down and he basically said, I want to get a list of goals for you so that we can, make sure the medication's working. Benchmarks that we can use to know whether or not, whether or not this is effective. And he had said that usually when they do this, Vyvanse is generally, it's more for, minors, for youth who get prescribed this, and their metric is grades in school. I didn't have that since obviously, I wasn't in school at the time. And, but I had a bunch of projects and things I'd been putting off for years and years and years, like reorganizing home, deep cleaning, cleaning out clutter. I had a lot of mess that I had to get cleaned up. And I stuff I'd been putting off, things that, a bunch of half done projects, a lot of things that just executive dysfunction got the better of. And let me tell you guys, even with my mobility jacked up because of my hips, I got through everything, my entire backlog of tasks in 8 days. I did it all in the first 8 days. And for the first time, everything was clean and tidy. Everything that had a place was in its place. I had actual organization and I could maintain it. I had actual function. And it was an eye-opener. And it gave me a total change in perspective, actually. This realization of being neurodivergent gave me a lens that I could review my past. And I looked at a lot of things, and a lot of things were starting to make more sense. I realized I've been living my entire life with a literal disability, untreated, no help, no anything. And I've been living life, it's basically hard mode. I didn't even know why. And now that I knew the why, I could focus on the how. Because, why is always about the past. When you ask why something happened or whatever it is, it always has something to do with the past. But how, that's my word, because how is about the future. How are we going to fix it? How are we going to move forward? How are we going to benefit from this? So with this newfound clarity, I started to examine how I was functioning in various roles, both professional and personal. How I was functioning as an employee through all the different careers I've had. How I was functioning as a husband, a father, a brother, a son. How I was just as a person. And I finally realized that the answer to what is wrong with you, it's not that I'm autistic at all, because there's nothing wrong with being neurodivergent. So it wasn't necessarily like that was anything wrong with me, but it did explain a lot of what I was doing. So instead of what was wrong with me, what happened to me? And what happened was I was living life with a cognitive handicap that had never been addressed. And that's what happened. I was merely just surviving life. And that's how I exactly view it. I'm a survivor. And the term is very... It wasn't until recently, actually, that I was looking at what the suicide statistics are for neurodivergent people. And autistic adults are 2 to 4 times more likely to experience suicide, ideation, thoughts, even follow through than neurotypical adults. And some studies even show that it's 9 times higher suicide mortality in autistic adults without intellectual disability. And the same thing applies to ADHD. ADHD people have 2 to 3 times higher risk. So when you couple, ADHD with the co-occurring depression, anxiety, substance abuse, the risk is pretty extreme. And the risk really comes from us trying to live and survive in a world that is just not built for our nervous system. And I'll admit, over the years, especially while I was still in active addiction, I had some very, very dark moments. And I came close to, ending it a few times, that I barely survived. And now looking back at it, I can see why. It was fueled by my neurodivergence and just not knowing my place. And I'm pretty sure most of the audience, especially if you've been, struggling with neurodivergence, you can understand where I'm coming from with this. So I see myself as a survivor. I survived untreated neurodivergence. And that's another reason I wanted to start this podcast, is to reach out to other survivors like me, others who might have been late diagnosed, a little bit late to the party with this, but now we realize what is, really what our major roadblocks and hurdles have been. You know, we've been basically raw dogging life up until we received that clarity. So, with this realization and with this new lens of neurodivergence, I was really did a deep dive into my past to suss out all of the whys. That's what I was really after, was the whys. And I started to come to these realizations. I came to realize that I was a mismatch for a lot of my past situations, you know, especially employment, especially like social situations. And other ones I was a perfect fit for, especially situations that demanded results. I realized in most of my normal styles of cognition, stuff that I took for granted, bottom-up processing, pattern recognition, are in fact abnormal compared to the rest of the world. And that in that abnormality, though, there's value. I've always been someone who I notice things that other people don't notice. Sometimes it's like quirky observations. Other times it's led to some pretty severe social catastrophes. Because, you know, with ADHD, very little impulse control, and my mouth runs faster than my brain oftentimes. And this brought me to a whole other realization, is that since I've always been uncomfortable in my own skin, and especially uncomfortable in social situations, I do what's called masking. And all of us who are, especially adults with, living with neurodivergence, you know all about what masking is. Basically, it means fake it till you make it. I'm trying to fit in on the outside while I'm barely maintaining on the inside. I would say it's like a duck. You know, you see a duck, it just looks like it's sitting there floating, calm and serene on the surface, but underneath he's just paddling for his dear life. And that's how I felt inside all the time. Masking, absolutely exhausting. But I managed to evolve, you know, with masking, and I would put together like different, conversation trees, different like personalities and things that I would piece together from watching other people, watching TV, watching like all these different things. I'm like, okay, well, this is how you act in this situation. And I would mimic it and basically put together a pretty larger than life personality fueled by ADHD. Any of you guys who know me personally, you know how you know how it could get. But a lot of this was calculated too. I found a lot of times in social situations, if I was like aggressively friendly or overly friendly, and overly extroverted, I found that I could dictate the tempo of an encounter, and I wouldn't feel so out of place. And this turned out on some hands it would work, other times it would be really, really off-putting. However, once I got medicated, though, I realized the medication fixed that almost overnight. Like the Vyvanse got it. I got rid of it almost completely, and I no longer feel or even felt the need to perform anymore. It's really wild how that works. One thing I will say is I was warned that with a dual diagnosis of ADHD, once the ADHD part was handled with the medication, a lot of the autistic tendencies would come to the surface. And as I've, gone on this journey, I found that this turns out to be very, very true. Especially with sensory issues. I have a lot less tolerance for loud noises. I have a really hard time filtering out like background noise. Before, it wouldn't be that much of an issue. Now, noise-canceling headphones are my best friend. I find that I'm not nearly as spontaneous. I have a lot better impulse control. Also, I don't chase things like I used to. I haven't played video games. I haven't watched TV. None of that interests me. I've been very, very focused on this project right now, and it's kind of wild to me how I have control over what I can focus on. I guess that's one of the other major, major changes with this. Because before, I would never know where my hyper focus would land. You know, it could be something useful. Most of the time, it was some frivolous nonsense. I'd be staying up all night reading about Nazi UFOs or some other nonsense, you know, fringe topics. I've always been a special interest of mine, but I would dive into these hour-long loopholes. Meanwhile, I'm like literally calling off work so I could read up about Hitler and his flying saucers. True story. It's freaking wild how how a neurodivergent brain will work. But I found that, especially medicated, I have total control over these hyper-focused tunnels. Now, instead of focusing on things that would interest me, I'm not trying to fill the dopamine hole anymore. So I can focus on things what I want to. I can focus on things with intensity what I want to, instead of what just naturally draws me in. And this has actually turned out to be pretty effective. For the first time in my life, this coupled with executive function and follow through, I'm able to do some pretty, pretty amazing things. So that brings me to why we're here and why this podcast and what does this podcast really have to do with anything? So when I started to look at what my actual achievements were, you know, not only the road to getting to this diagnosis, but everything I've achieved over the years, I started to realize that maybe I'm not as much of a failure as I thought I was. You know, like I said, I would have that internal voice all the time, really downplaying. But I came to realize that I've done some pretty interesting things. Even before I was medicated, I managed to get two state licenses. I started an LLC. I wrote a book. I wrote two companion guides for the book. And I started my Path of the Sober Seeker podcast. All this while treating my injury. Most of that was pre-surgery. So, maybe I was more capable of, way more than what I was giving myself credit for. And my psychologist told me that she wanted me to do the full assessment just so I would know what I was capable of. And since I've always been someone who downplays my ability and my role in things, which I do naturally, but that's attitude that isn't serving me at all. So when I took another look at the body of work that I had achieved over the last few months through the lens of neurodivergence, I was shocked at what I was capable of. My book, From Liquor to Thicker, just on the surface, is a journey of the 12 steps of AA through the lens of Islam. We touched on that, which was, something I've seen a lot of overlap with. But what I didn't know is that my pattern recognition was at work. And looking at it, my book itself, it's a masterclass in systems integration. It's a highly marketable skill that I didn't even know I was capable of using. I didn't even know I had it. And I realized a lot of my other neurodivergent skills are marketable and unique and pretty astounding. I realized that my hypervigilance when I was over the road was both real-time and predictive risk management. I've always had a gift for spotting small problems before they become big problems, and this has saved my various employers many heartaches and grief over the years. And my default setting for processing information is bottom-up. We call it bottom-up processing. Basically, I see details first and patterns second, which is very valuable because I'm capable of extracting the data from the noise. I understand builds and systems from raw, I understand builds and systems and things from raw sensory data and details and follow that upward to meaning rather than just the neurotypical method of starting with assumptions or context and filtering down to meaning. So I have to build my way up there. And this was a breakthrough moment for me because it kind of explained some of my behavior. I had always been accused of being reactive, spastic, especially when I was a child and in the middle of meltdowns. And it was because of overstimulation. I was taking in so much sensory data and I didn't have the context for it. And all I knew was what was happening. I didn't know the why. And it explained quite a bit. It explained what I was doing wasn't necessarily reaction. It was latency. And since I was experiencing cognitive latency, it didn't mean I didn't really think about my actions. It just meant I had reacted before thinking. So all this time, it wasn't what's wrong with you. It's what happened to you. And what happened was I was experiencing latency. So the point I'm getting to and why my pathway is collective consulting firm and why this podcast and why I'm doing all of this is realizing that my neurodivergence and cognitive skill are actually an asset rather than a liability. Given the right environment, I've always been able to thrive. And this has been pretty consistent data across many neurodivergent people in the workplace. There was a 2022 study done by JP Morgan Chase's Autism at Work program. It showed that autistic professionals in tech roles with job matching and support were 90 to 140% more productive than neurotypical employees and also committed fewer errors. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, they did a software testing program with Australia's Department of Human Services and found that neurodiverse teams, many of them autistic, were 30% more productive than neurotypical teams. Granted, these are both internal studies done in industry. They're company-led. They're not academic, not peer-reviewed science. Still, those figures are pretty eye-opening. And I can tell you from personal experience that if I'm interested or engaged in something that triggers my hyper-focus, my overall production or for whatever the project is or whatever the rabbit hole is pretty astounding. And I'd wager that anyone with ADHD can relate. When you find a new hobby that is really scratching that novelty itch for you, your hyperfocus is pretty amazing. So now, imagine being able to capitalize on that. As neurodivergent people, we all have a unique set of skills. And more importantly, we have unique perceptions that can add value to any business. And I say perspective is our most important aspect because as a whole, we tend to notice things that other people do not. One of the scariest things for any leader anywhere are the unknown unknowns. You can plan for the known unknowns, but what is going to get you are the unknown unknowns, the things that no one in the room thought to look at. And these are things that can eventually surface with catastrophic results. But I feel like adding some neurodiversity to that planning session might have just uncovered that unknown and would have averted a big mess. So that's the point of the podcast. I want to help my fellow neurodivergents understand the value of their uniqueness. I want to connect with leaders in business, industry, and help them realize what neurodivergent employees bring to the table, what we can contribute to the organization. And ideally, we can work together towards mutual prosperity. So I want to thank everyone for tuning into the first episode. You know, it's going to get better from here. This is a, you know, I just wanted to introduce myself, give a quick shout out to everyone. And thank you again. So, you know, if any part of this resonated with you, I want you to know that one, you're not alone, you're not lazy, and you're not broken. You know, you've been surviving in an environment that never really learned how to read you or how to help you. And this podcast is for all of you. This podcast is to help cross that threshold so we can move from surviving to thriving. So I want to invite all of you to come with me. Let's evolve together, and I'll catch you on the next episode of The Sight Side.